And welcome everybody to the Body Slam Radio. Of course, my name is Duncan Welker. I am your host. And this week on the Body Slam Radio, guys, if you checked my Facebook, Twitter about last week, you would have seen that I said, hey, for the next episode of the Body Slam Radio, I'll be doing something different on Facebook and Twitter. Well, I will promote this at the end of the show. Anyways, what we're doing today is looking at five matches across the promotion New Japan Pro Wrestling's history that they've, you know, since they've been in business, the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s. I would have picked a match from this year as well, but, you know, reasons. This episode was originally supposed to go out, you know, before 2021, but I had to redo it, and, well, all that good jazz. Anyways, the matches I have picked are not particularly, could not particularly be the best, but they're matches that I think anyone could just sit down and watch. And if you're watching, and if you're wondering why I'm doing New Japan matches, it's because I recently got NJPW World as a little Christmas gift to myself, you know, in order to prepare for Wrestle Kingdom 15. And, you know, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch some Japanese matches to kind of help me get back in the swing of things. I watched some of the recent stuff, and I'm like, you know what? Let's do a Body Slam Radio episode about it. So, oh, and I forgot to mention, I posted this link on the r/NJPW subreddit. And for those of you that are listening from there, hello and welcome. And let me just say right off the bat, I am not a puro expert. I may mess up some things. I may mess up some names, some moves, whatever you want to call it. I'm probably going to mess it up. But I'm 18 years old. The fact that I'm even watching Japanese wrestling is amazing because not a lot of American kids watch Japanese wrestling and all that good jazz. Anyways, let's get started. The first match I have selected from the 70s, well, the only match really, it took place on November 30th, 1979. This is Bob Backlund taking on Antonio Inoki for the WWF Championship. Now, let me explain. If you're wondering why is an American title in Japan, well, this was in the era when Vincent J. McMahon was still running the WWF as a territorial thing. I put territorial in quotes because, well, let's be honest, although Vincent J. McMahon was trying to stay a territory, it was a pretty big territory, let's be honest. Of course, we all know what would happen. Vincent J. would sell it to his son, Vince K. That's the current Vince we know today. And something-something WrestleMania, something-something Monday Night Wars, and now we're here. Okay, so this is 1979. Bob Backlund is the WWF champion, taking on Antonio Inoki, the founder of New Japan Pro Wrestling, keep in mind. A few notes I took here before the match got started was, you know, Backlund's coming in, this match as champion, and it's going to be kind of a mesh of styles, the American style of wrestling versus Japanese strong style in Antonio Inoki. And something else I noticed about the title itself, the physical WWF championship, was this was the purple strap, like the purple, like, main strap title, and it had, like, a green, and the back of the strap was green, and I'm like, you know, that's kind of an interesting look. I mean, we see colored straps today, like the tag belts on Raw and SmackDown, we see the Universal title, the 24/7 title, but the WWF title at that time, and really a lot of world champs at that time, were just either black or white or something else, I don't know. But it was kind of interesting to see a colored strap, but anyways, I digress. Let's get into the match. Inoki and Backlund start off in a feeling outs process. Nice takedown early on by Bob Backlund. Inoki and Backlund are both very good grapplers. Keep in mind, like I said earlier, Inoki is Japanese strong style, which has a lot of, you know, technical feeling out process. Backlund is an American style of wrestling, which again, amateur wrestling, if you've ever watched that. I'm not saying American amateur wrestling and Japanese strong style is the same thing by any lengths, because, well, I'd offend a lot of people. But in a way, they are, but in a way, they aren't. I'm just going to move on. Anyways, Inoki with a nice armbar, rushing the arm of Backlund, but Backlund is able to escape. Backlund takes Inoki down and gets him in a leg scissor hold, and then a little later on, Inoki rolls over Backlund, goes for the cover, but Backlund kicks out, and then Backlund with a backslide cover of his own, but Inoki kicks out. Inoki later on then rolls Inoki up, and Inoki kicks out. Inoki with a nice takedown into a triangle choke. Very beautiful there. You don't see that very often. Inoki then again into a scissor leg hold at the head. It's probably called something else. Like I said, I'm probably going to mess a lot of these names and holds up. Excuse me. But anyways, it's a scissor leg hold at the head. Very, very dangerous and retching there, but it's beautiful nonetheless. Anyways, Backlund's able to jump out of it, tries for a submission move of his own. Inoki counters that, and back in and puts Backlund back into a scissor hold. A little later on, Backlund does finally escape, and he covers Inoki three separate times. One, two, kick out. One, two, kick out. One, kick out. And, well, Inoki kicks out all three separate times. Inoki with an Irish whip drop toe hold, tries to put Backlund in a grounded sleeper. Backlund escapes, and the crowd cheers for that sequence of moves. Very beautiful sequence there. Anyways, moving on. Backlund with a brutal leg drop to the leg of Inoki, and he just starts working over the leg of Inoki, starts retching it, does another leg drop to the leg of Inoki. Inoki then with a slap to Backlund, and that fires up the champion, and here we go. Inoki with a fiery sequence of moves, goes for the cover, but Backlund kicks out. Inoki then later on with a nice scoop slam, and then locks in an armbar on Backlund. Inoki is still retching the arm a couple minutes later. Backlund is lifting up himself and Inoki, and, you know, Backlund puts Inoki puts him on the top rope, and Backlund jabs at Inoki, which sends him down to the mat. A little later on, Inoki with scoop slam, then Backlund on the canvas catches him in a cradle. 1-2 kick out by Inoki. Inoki with a scissor flip to the Backlund by the ropes, which allows Backlund to roll to the outside. Very, very smart by Backlund there. Inoki with a suplex, then brings Backlund back into the ring. Goes for the cover, but Backlund kicks out. Backlund then with a beautiful starting back suplex. Crawls over to Inoki for the cover, but Inoki's foot is outside of the ropes, which means the count is stopped in its tracks. Kind of a rope break, but also kind of not. Anyways, moving on. Backlund with a devastating pile driver, and both men are down. Who's going to get up first? It's Backlund. Backlund crawls over to the cover, but again, Inoki's foot is outside the ring. Again, rope break, but it's not. Anyways, moving on. Backlund hits the ropes, looks for a splash, but Inoki gets his legs up, his knees, just up in time. And then a little later on, Inoki with a knee drop off the top. He barely gets what he was going for. Like, it kind of looked like he was trying to get the face, but he got, like, part of the head or part of the side of his body. Either way, he got it. Inoki goes for the cover, but Backlund's foot is on the rope, which that forces a rope break. Backlund gets whipped into the ropes. Monkey flip into the cover. Inoki kicks out. Inoki puts Backlund into an octopus hold. Backlund then turns it around, and now Inoki's in the octopus hold. Inoki breaks out of it and hits a gut-wrench suplex, goes for the cover, but Backlund kicks out. And then a little around here, Backlund with a gotch suplex, very beautiful there, crawls over to the cover. Inoki kicks out. Once again, Inoki has Backlund in an octopus hold. Backlund just gets to the rope and forces a rope break. And something I noticed here is that there's a man outside the ring trying to get in between the two, trying to interfere. I thought it was a fan. I did some research. It's Tigerjeet Singh. Tigerjeet Singh is a very famous Punjab wrestler. He was part of early Japanese wrestling, to my knowledge. And, yeah, but he is stopped by Young Lions and some of Inoki's team, I guess you could say nowadays. Anyway, closing moment of this match, Backlund with an atomic drop, covers Inoki. Inoki kicks out, and then almost immediately, like not even 2 seconds, Inoki is back on his feet, hits a back suplex, covers Backlund. 1, 2, 3, and Inoki wins the World Wrestling Federation title and is immediately mobbed by his team right then and there. You know, I really liked this match. It was, like I said, you know, American amateur wrestling-esque style versus Japanese strong style. You didn't know what you were going to get. I liked it. I'm not a big fan of amateur wrestling and technical wrestling too much, but I kind of liked this one. It was kind of nice to just have a slow-paced match and then, you know, a little burst of offense and then back to technical wrestling and then burst of offense. I liked it personally. It was very nice. And yeah, I think if you're a fan of, you know, early 80s, late 70s wrestling, definitely watch this match. So a little aftermath about what happened afterwards. Inoki would then face Backlund in a rematch. That would get thrown out because Tigerjeet Singh interfered again. Then Inoki famously said, "I don't want this." Title was declared vacant by the then WWF president, it was not Jack Tunney. This was, again, the 70s. I couldn't pull up his name. I can't think of his name at the moment. Anyways, title was declared vacant. Backlund win the title a few days later, and this was basically a ghost championship reign. So Inoki is not a official WWF champion, which, man, that would have been weird to say. Hey, yeah, the founder of your company, the former world WWE champion. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's weird personally, but I think it would have been weird to some fans who don't know what New Japan is. But Either way, I liked it. Enjoyable match. Want to go watch it? It's up on njpwworld.com. And yeah, so that was the only match I picked from the 70s. I'm picking one match from each decade. So now we go into the 1980s. Anyways, now we're into the 1980s. September 20th, 1989 to be exact. This is for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. This sees Big Van Vader is taking on, and I had to look this up to make sure this was accurate, Crusher Bam Bam Bigelow. It's Bam Bam Bigelow. When I saw the words Crusher Bam Bam Bigelow, I'm like, what in the world? I don't know. It was weird. Anyways, this match is for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Vader is the champion. Bam Bam Bigelow is the challenger. And special caveat here, Antonio Inoki is the special guest referee for this match. So this is, again, September 20th, 1989. And special little note about this. This match was called the Super Power Battle in Osaka. A little weird there, but okay. Feel like you're watching an anime instead of a wrestling match. Go for it. Anyways, Vader with that sweet, sick-looking helmet. Oh, my God. If you're a fan of Vader's Japanese work, you'll know what I'm talking about. You know, the entrance helmet that had the smoke coming out of it. Oh my God, I love that helmet. He has that sweet looking entrance helmet. It's just beautiful there. Anyways, this, you would think this is a big old hot fight between two big men of the sport, and it is in certain ways. But these two men were anything but big old monsters, pal. They were men who could move around like a light heavyweight. But we're big. I see Keith Lee in Bam Bam Bigelow. Or excuse me, the other way around. I see Bam Bam Bigelow in Keith Lee. But unfortunately, we might not get to see that again since Vince reportedly does not like Keith's light heavyweight style of moving around. And he said, we need more monsters, pal. I don't know. It's dumb, but hey, I don't run a multi-million-dollar company. Anyways. Moving on, Inoki gets in between the two as this match starts off. They go over to the corner. Inoki gets in between the two, separates them, and here we go. Nice drop, toe hold takedown by Bigelow early on. Bigelow looks to hit something with his leg, looks like to kick him or something, but Vader catches the leg of Bigelow, and he's hopping and hopping and hopping and hopping, and then finally, bam, enziguri. And then he follows that up with a scoop slam and a drop kick that sends Vader to the outside. Very, like, you don't see that kind of stuff in big man matches. I don't care if it's like this match, actually. You will not see this type of offense. You won't see an enziguri followed up by a scoop slam, then by a drop kick. I mean, you might see a scoop slam because, you know, that's a move that a lot of big men throw around, a lot of people in general throw around. Excuse me. But you won't see the enziguri. That's for certain. Anyways, moving on. Bigelow brings Vader back into the ring with a suplex, goes for the cover, but Vader kicks out. And like I said, for a big man match, this is very reminiscent of light heavyweight matches. Not cruiserweight yet, but light heavyweight. If you ever watch some of Vader's matches in the WWE, WCW, same with Bigelow. When anyone, even in ECW, Bigelow was, you could tell that these guys moved around not like traditional big men. And that's something I like. It's like I said earlier, I see Bam Bam Bigelow in Keith Lee. Yeah, Vader, but I just see Bam Bam Bigelow more in Keith Lee than Vader. Because here's my thing. Bam Bam Bigelow did more of the flying around big man. Keith Lee, same thing. I'll explain later in a future episode. But for now, we're going to move on. Vader with a brutalizing lariat and follows it up with a dropkick that sends Bigelow to the outside this time. A little later in the match, Vader starts wrenching the arm of Bigelow and then gets him down to the ground, puts him in an armbar. Very brutalizing maneuver there. Anyways, later on in this match, Vader with a dropkick. Bigelow gets up. Bigelow with a dropkick. Vader gets up. They both run into each other. Nothing. They both run into each other again. And they both go down, and it's called a double down, but that was a thing of beauty there. Anyways, Vader then gets up, hits a standing suplex, goes for the cover, but Bigelow kicks out. Then Vader with a powerful slam, I would have called it a scoop slam, and I think it more or less is a scoop slam, but here I'm not calling it a direct scoop slam. Because when Vader picked Bigelow up, he starts to slam him, and then he like goes into the slam with him. I mean, you could call it It's not a jackhammer. It was a scoop slam, but let's just call it a scoop slam for the purpose. Vader hits a scoop slam, goes for the cover. Bigelow kicks out. Then Vader with a stun gun, then hits the ropes. Splash, cover, 1, 2. Bigelow kicks out. And let me just tell y'all something. I love the stun gun move. If you've never seen a stun gun, go watch not only this match, but basically the stun gun is the guy picks him up by the guy hit Irish whips his opponent into the ropes, picks him up by the legs, and then drops him. It's called like Snake Eyes or something like that as well, but I primarily know it as the stun gun thanks to 2K16's Austin career mode. I love that move, and I don't know why. It's more so a heelish move than a face move or babyface heel, Rudo and Technica, whatever you want to call them. It's more so a bad guy move, but there's just something about seeing a guy go face first into the ropes, eyes first rather, and just like that, it's beautiful to me. I don't know what it is. I like it, but anyways, moving on. In the closing moment of this match, Vader is just waiting for Bigelow to get up. Bigelow finally gets up. He gets up. Lariat right to Bigelow. Vader covers Bigelow. 1, 2, 3 to retain the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention, make sure you have headphones on when listening to this. Anyways, this match, like I said, coming into this match blindly, you would think, oh, it's just another big man match. It's not going to be a lot of moves. But if you know Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow, if you've watched a lot of their matches, you know that this is not a typical big man match. This is going to be technical move. This is going to be light heavyweight, junior heavyweight type stuff that you don't see out of big men very often. And that is what I like. But yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I think if you're a fan of these two men, definitely go and watch this match. Of course, we all know Vader would go on to WCW and then the WWF. Then he went back to WCW, really didn't do much for a while. Shifted between a couple promotions here and there. And then he unfortunately passed a few short years ago, and that really sucks. Bam Bam Bigelow, same thing. He came in between WCW, ECW, WWF. Well, actually, he had left the WWF a few years prior to this. And unfortunately, he died in the late to mid-2000s. And unfortunately, both those big men are gone. But if you want to honor them, watch one of their matches or watch this match. Because honestly, I think this is how you can showcase two big men like that. But yeah. Okay. Anyways, moving on. Now we're into the 1990s. I don't know why I just do that. Anyways, we're into the 90s now. In particular, April 16th, 1994. This is a match in the Super J Cup. This sees Black Tiger taking on Wild Pegasus. Who is Black Tiger? Well, that is a story for another time, but I'll give you a quick description, basically. Black Tiger is what the antagonist to Tiger Mask would be. If you've ever heard of Tiger Mask, it's a big series over in Japan. It's a big wrestling gimmick over in Japan. It was taken from a manga to an anime to a lot of characters. But Black Tiger, of course, is the antagonist to Tiger Mask. He's not so much a rudo or bad guy, but he would do bad guy things. Anyways, this Black Tiger, this is not the original. This is the second Black Tiger. This Black Tiger was portrayed by Eddie Guerrero. And, of course, Wild Pegasus, if you know your foreign wrestling, Wild Pegasus was Chris Benoit. And before we go any further, I am not going to make any reference to what Benoit did in 2007. It is a shame that he did what he did. And, from a wrestling fan experience, yes, he is a great wrestler. But as a human being, what he did in 2007, that was awful. And I don't think he should be honored for that. Despite his tremendous wrestling ability, he should not be honored because of that single action. Now, can his wife be honored? Yes. I say you absolutely induct. Well, you know what? I'm not going to get into that. That's a story for another time. Anyways, Black Tiger, Wild Pegasus, second round of 1994 Super J Cup. Let's go. Nice takedown early on by Pegasus out of the gate. Tiger starts picking the leg of Pegasus with a bunch of leg locks. That's a very smart strategy there, because if you can go to one body part in particular and you know what you're doing, then I think you can definitely wear down your opponent and win the match that way. Anyways, scoop slam and a senton combo by Black Tiger, then a double foot stomp, then a body drop goes for the cover, but Pegasus kicks out. Then a little later on, Black Tiger has Pegasus in a scissor headlock. Pegasus is able to break out of it. Then Tiger attempts a driver of some sort. Pegasus floats over top and hits a sick-looking inverted suplex. Then Pegasus picks Tiger up, chops him in the chest, and then Pegasus picks Tiger up like he's going for a suplex. And excuse my Generation Z termage here. While he has him up on more or less his shoulders, he then yeets Black Tiger into the ropes, or on the ropes, rather. And then finishes it off with a German suplexing, or a bridging German suplex cover. But Black Tiger is able to kick out of that. Then Pegasus with a powerbomb cover, but Black Tiger kicks out. Tiger is then whipped into the ropes. After attempting to whip Pegasus in the rope, Tiger is. Then Pegasus looks to throw Tiger up. Tiger, however, catches, or, let me redo that again. Tiger is whipped into the ropes after attempting to whip Pegasus into the ropes. Pegasus looks to pick him up and powerbomb, but Tiger then hits a beautiful Hurricane Rana. Then Black Tiger puts Pegasus in a camel clutch, a move invented by Gordy Guerrero, which, ironically, that factoid is probably one of the reasons why Muhammad Hassan got released from WWE, because if you don't know the story, Hassan was using the camel clutch move because, whole Arabic terrorist gimmick. And then allegedly Hassan said, hey, can you not use that move, to Guerrero? And Guerrero's like, well, my father invented this move, right? And it's like, awkward. Anyways, moving on. Pegasus later on with a back suplex cover, but Black Tiger is able to kick out. Then Black Tiger with a super hurricane run off the top rope covers Pegasus, but Pegasus kicks out. Then Black Tiger with a devastating, and you know what's coming next if you're a fan of this show, Brain Buster! Then in the closing moments of this match, Black Tiger is put on the top by Pegasus. Pegasus attempts something. Tiger shoves him, then Black Tiger looks for something, and then Tiger dives off the rope, but is met by an arm drag at the same time. Basically, he's caught and then put into it and then slammed by an arm drag. Pegasus covers Tiger to win the match and advance in the Super J Cup. Pretty good match. It was this is a match between two light heavyweights, or cruiserweights, or whatever you want to call them. This is a match you definitely want to go back and watch just for, the ability of both men, both Tiger and Pegasus and Guerrero and Benoit. Like I said, Benoit did what he did, and it sucks that he did that. And I think if he hadn't have done that this match, I think it would be put on a much bigger pedestal than it already is. Of course, we all know what happened with Benoit. He would go into ECW, and then he would go to WCW, and then and Guerrero would follow suit, actually. And then they both Benoit, Guerrero, Saturn, and Malenko, jump ship to WWF from WCW literally a day after Benoit wins the world title in WCW Revolution. And then, as they say, the rest is history. Guerrero dies in a hotel, and then Benoit, he does what he does. And one is revered, and the other is, that was depressing. Anyways, let's move on. Now we're into the 2000s. We're into the new millennium. Let's see how New Japan. Let's see the match I picked. This is a January 4th. This is a January 4th Wrestle Tokyo Dome match. Let me redo that. This is a January 4th. Tokyo Dome match, because what is New Japan or Japanese wrestling in general without a January 4th Tokyo Dome show? That is like peanut butter and jelly, or WWE and BS contracts. I'm going to move on. Anyways, this particular match took place on January 4th, 2004, and it sees Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Yoshihiro Takayama, and this is a unification match for the IWGP and NWF, the National Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championships. Nakamura, the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, and Takayama, the NWF Heavyweight Champion. Nakamura, like I said, came into the match as the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. Takayama comes in as the NWF Champion. Takayama won the belt last year at Wrestling World 2003. Wrestling World is basically a precursor to what Wrestle Kingdom is today. And by the way, I am excited for the double title match. First night, Naito versus Ibushi, and then whoever wins that match goes on to face Jay White. I'm excited for that. Anyways, let's go to this match. Nice single leg takedown early on by Nakamura, right into a grounded ankle lock or a calf crusher, whatever you want to call it or whatever it looks like to you. Anyways, then Takayama gets on the offensive and he forces a rope break, and then he goes to work on Nakamura with a brutal kick to the face of Nakamura by Takayama. And honestly, I was shocked because like the way he kicked him, it was like pow, like right to the nose. I'm shocked he didn't start bleeding from either the nose or the face or whatever. Like, it was brutal. It looked really brutal. Anyways, something I noticed watching this match, they cut to Josh Barnett, Tiger Mask, and Antonio Inoki all sitting at ringside. And I'm like, whoa, that is a legendary crew of wrestlers. Now, when you think of Japanese wrestlers, you think of Inoki and Tiger Mask. You don't think of much as Josh Barnett. But, of course, Barnett was a big, you know, whole thing in the 2000s of New Japan, because New Japan was kind of going through this whole MMA shoot style sort of renaissance or whatever you want to call it. But it was just kind of cool to see because, you know, Josh Barnett, of course, you know, well, we all know what he did. And then he would go on to do commentary for when Access TV actually picked up New Japan's U.S. TV rights. I really wish that was still on. I don't know how the hell Don Callis didn't keep that going, but anyways, I'm just going to move on from that. Let's get back to the match. Naka with a belly-to-belly suplex off the ropes. Naka then covers Takayama, and barely even a one count, and Takayama just kicks out right there. Naka then with a beautiful German suplex. Takayama then gets up, tries to kick Naka. Naka catches the leg and then lifts up the rest of Takayama for a beautiful power bomb, just beautiful. Beautiful then. Anyways, the Naka gets Takayama into a triangle hold. Takayama just lifts Nakamura up and slams him down to the mat. Now, some people would say he slammed him down with a power bomb or a choke slam or a choking power bomb. I'm just going to say Takayama lifted Naka up and took him down with a choking power bomb, because that's what it looked like to me. Anyway, but that was kind of cool. Anyways, moving on. Takayama then takes control with some brutalizing elbow shots, and then a brutalizing knee shot goes for the cover. And, you know, he does that whole I'm confident strong man one foot cover on the chest of Nakamura, but Naka is able to kick out at two. And then a little later on, Takayama with an eye gouge, or an eye poke, eye gouge, whatever you want to call it, right to the eyes of Nakamura, and ouch, that hurt. Takayama then attempts to whip Naka into the ropes. Nakamura catches him and then puts in a triangle hold on Takayama. Takayama then picks Naka up out of the triangle but Naka is able to keep the hold in, and literally while Takayama has him up, Naka just flips him over, and with the hold still locked in, keep in mind you, Naka flips him over and just keeps him in, but Taka is able to roll up Naka, but Naka is able to kick out. Then Takayama, and again, when I do these brutal, it's brutal. So let's go here. Takayama with a brutal big knee to Nakamura. Goes for the cover, but Naka kicks out at the last possible second. And these fans are fired up, and I can already tell. Takayama with a back suplex goes, and Naka gets fired up. And like it's sort of like the comeback sequences in the WWE games, you know, like, you know, the opponent hits a move. It's basically like hulking up. Let's just say for the purpose of this thing, Naka gets ready to get fired up and hulks up, and then, boom, Naka gets stopped in his tracks right there. Anyway, closing moment of this match, Takayama with a running high knee, which I believe is his like setup move or finisher at the time. Naka is out, 1-2, but then kick out by Nakamura. And after Naka kicks out, Takayama then hits his ankle finisher, the Everest German suplex, which is basically just a bridging German suplex. Then covers, and then 1-2, kick out by Nakamura right there. And after Naka kicks out, not even like 3 seconds afterwards, Naka gets up and then locks in a shining angle. But to me, like an armbar, the shining angle is, well, basically what you would think. It's an armbar-esque looking maneuver. It's kind of like a Kimura. And like I said, do any pure experts that are listening to this and saying, that's not what a shining angle is? I know. And like I said at the beginning of this episode, I'm not going to be the best puro expert in the world. Let me have my fun. Anyways, Nake locks in a shining angle, and Takayama stands no more, and he taps out. Well, he gives up more or less. He doesn't tap. He gives up, and Nakamura retains the IWGP Heavyweight Championship and gains the National Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship. And, yeah, Naka's double champ. And really, that's the last time we see the NWF Championship, really, at all. The NWF was a promotion started around the 80s, but then I think Inoki took its assets, or somebody took its assets, and basically said to Inoki, hey, I want to get rid of this. Can we just do this right here? I guess. I don't know. Anyways, that was a great match. And this was at the beginning of Nakamura's career. Like, we all know what Takayama goes on to do in his career. You know, he continues to wrestle, but he does some MMA stuff like any other Japanese wrestler would do. But this is more or less the beginning of Nakamura's career. And this was a really, really good match, I think, for the start of someone's career. Now, granted, this was like about like 4 years after he debuted, so he wasn't like a rookie yet. Like he might have been. I don't know how long it took for him to go from young lion to, you know, main event established star. But that was like, this was the beginning of his career, and you could tell he was ready for stardom in wrestling. I really wish WWE would have put the title on him at 34 when he faced Styles, because I think that would have helped him. And he didn't even need to turn heel. And if he did, let him turn heel. Let him be the heel Japanese champion. Something. Like, I love Nakamura with all my heart, and I really wish he'd be used better. Now, granted, I get it. You know, not everyone can be world champion, and I understand that. But come on. You sign a hot asset in Shinsuke Nakamura, and you're going to tell me you don't do anything with him besides an Intercontinental title reign, and I believe a tag title reign, right? I might be wrong, but I feel like it could be used better. Now, I'm not going to be one of the fans that says, Nakamura should go to AEW, because not everyone can go to AEW, you marks. But I'm going to move on. This was a great match to see Naka kind of in his starting out process as a wrestler. Takayama put up a great fight. But like I said, Nakamura, of course, would get the best of him. And he would go on to stardom. Which, by the way, I have not watched that Nakamura-Lesnar match yet. I want to, and I'm probably going to sooner than I might think. But anyways, this was a really good match. I enjoyed it. And like I said, and rather, I should say this, I enjoy every match I watch, unless, like, it looks bad. I try to go into every match with, like, a good positive mindset. If it just looks really bad, then I'm just gonna be like, eh, it was okay. But I try to enjoy and be positive about every match I watch. I try to be that person. But anyways, let's move on. Now we're into the 2010s, the previous decade. And yes, I could have picked any match I wanted to. I could have picked Okada and Omega, because this is the decade that I really got into New Japan. Omega is one of the guys that got me into New Japan. Styles was to Balor, or Devitt was, of course, another guy who got me in because I saw him on Access TV. And I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. But you know who actually was one of the first guys that even got, who kind of introduced me to Japanese wrestling? Jushin Thunder Liger. Now, I understand Liger didn't do a whole lot in this era. I mean, he recently retired this past year in 2020. But he got me into Japanese wrestling. And I thought, you know what? I haven't reviewed a Liger match yet. I just reviewed a Nakamura match. I haven't reviewed a Liger match yet. So let's see what we got. I found a couple, and I saw the Styles and Liger match from RPW, and I thought, I could do that. But instead, I picked this one. Jushin Thunder Liger taking on Pac, or Neville for WWE fans, in a Best of the Super Juniors Block A match. Of course, Best of the Super Juniors is, if I'm not mistaken, a Liger idea, so it's kind of like, Liger's kind of like the Chris Jericho of Japan, and here's what I mean. Liger created the Best of Super Juniors. Jericho allegedly created the Money in the Bank ladder match. See the similarities? I could be wrong, but anyways, let's move on. And let's start it off here. The two men shake hands, sign of respect there by two men who I think revolutionized light heavyweight, junior heavyweight wrestling. Anyways, the crowd, you can tell, is definitely 100% behind Liger. I almost said Lager. Liger, that would have showed my American right there. Liger starts off the match with a beautiful arm takedown. And then a little around, nice drop kick by Pac. A uppercut in the corner by Pac follows it up with a quick standing suplex. Pac into the cover. 1, 2, kick out by Liger. Liger then locks Pac in a reverse surfboard stretch. And man, I've never taken any move at all. But like, if someone is picking your body up and flexing it, someone has the power to do that and they're just flexing it, you can like even as a fan, you can feel how brutalizing it is. Anyways, then Liger with a camel clutch on Pac, and Liger's just trying to basically wear him down with submission moves, but Pac is refusing to give up. Pac, and then later on, he gets some offensive end with a beautiful diving twist and cross body to the outside on Liger. Pac with a springboard cross body, cover, 1, 2, Liger kicks out. Liger then with a stiff-looking lariat. I could call it a clothesline, but come on. Most Japanese-based wrestlers take lariats, not clotheslines. Then later on, Pac with a standing moonsault, cover, 1, 2, kick out by Liger. Pac with a super power bomb off the top, looks for a springboard 450. Liger moves out of the way just in time, and Pac eats the canvas. Then Liger hits a Liger bomb, covers Pac, 1, 2, kick out by Pac at the last second. Closing moments of this match, Pac with a German suplex, then he drags Liger over to the corner, he goes up on the top, and what does he hit? Corkscrew shooting star press. 1, 2, 3. Pac wins the match and gets a point in the best of Super Juniors. He wins basically. Sorry, I should have just said he wins and you know all that. Anyways, Pac wins this match and this was kind of cool to watch. Like I said, I could have picked any match I wanted to because this is when I really started watching New Japan. I could have picked an Omega and Okada. I could have picked Styles. I could have picked Devitt before he left for WWE. I could have picked an Ibushi match. I could have picked another Kenny Omega match. I could have picked any match I wanted to. But I picked this one for the following reasons. Like I said, Liger is one of the men who got me into Japanese wrestling. Of course, the Devitts and Omegas and Styles, they would get me into New Japan. But Liger got me into foreign wrestling, I should say, not just Japanese wrestling. He got me into foreign wrestling. And, you know, when I saw him retire, it was kind of sad. But another reason I picked is because Pac. You don't see Pac. When I watched him as Neville, I'm like, man, this guy's really awesome. Did he do anything prior? And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And I've never really watched a Pac match before he entered WWE as Neville. And I'm like, you know what? I'll watch this. There's definitely, you know, more, well, I wouldn't say entertaining, but there's more like there's matches that more people know than Liger and Pac, but I definitely think you should, if you have New Japan World, go watch Liger and Pac. That is a really good match between two legends of light heavyweight, junior heavyweight. Let's just put it at guys under 250 wrestling. Okay, so that is it for the show. Thank you to any new listeners. Thank you to any old listeners, because I really need your support. This past year has been kind of a whirlwind one for me. I kind of got out of wrestling almost, but then I'm like, well, coronavirus is hitting. I might want to do something new. So I kind of started watching other wrestling like AEW. I kept watching WWE because let's be honest, WWE or really any American wrestling is how people get started. Not everyone gets started on New Japan because not everyone has access to it. But I started watching indie wrestling matches from across the country. And then I'm like, you know what? Wrestle Kingdom's coming up. I got a good job. Let's get New Japan World. And it was kind of interesting. And I enjoyed my time watching all this new wrestling. And yeah, that was kind of a really cool thing to just go back and watch, you know, Japanese wrestling from the past. But, yeah, that's all I really got to say about it. This is pretty much it for the show this week. Thank you guys for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Don't forget to follow our social medias. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can buy a Body Slam Radio t-shirt at storefrontier.com/Duncan-Welker. It's not only my personal store where you can buy a Welkermania shirt, but you can buy a Body Slam Radio thing there. What I'm trying to say is just follow our social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Facebook, The Body Slam Radio. Twitter, at The Body Slam Radio. Instagram, at Body Slam Radio. It's pretty much it. So, for The Body Slam Radio, I'm Duncan Welker, and here is to a great 2021, not only in wrestling, but across the world in whatever goes down. See you guys next time.